Welcome to Go Deeper, Wyndham Art Gallery's podcast channel, part of our Go Deeper program that provides an in-depth look at each of our exhibitions. Today you are listening to an abridged recording of the Rapid Eye Movement exhibition featuring co-curator Raina Peterson and exhibiting artists Ruth Nyarot-Roch and Manisha Anjali.
I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations as the traditional custodians of the unceded land in which I am living and working right now. Pay my respects to all elders past, present and emerging, and extend this respect to all Indigenous people who may be tuning into this. Hi, my name is Raina Peterson. I'm co-curator of Rapid Eye Movement at Wyndham Art Gallery with my fellow co-curator, Timur Ball. And I'm here to have an artist conversation with Manisha Anjali and Ruth Nyarot-Roch. Also part of this exhibition are some very exciting artists: Devika Bilimoria, Karen Casey, Forrest Vicky Capo, Danny Reynolds, and Naretha Williams. And this exhibition is on until the 13th of March. Please check it out. I'm really excited by how it's turned out and by all the exciting artists who have agreed to be part of this. But for now, I'm very excited to be talking with Ruth and Manisha about their work. So, maybe to start off, could you please tell me a little bit about the works that you guys have at Rapid Eye Movement? Who would like to go first?
I'm happy to go first.
Yeah, thank you.
So my work for this show is a text piece written with chalk on the wall of the gallery, and it's called In Between the Mountain and the Sea. It is instructions for dreaming in between conscious bodies of water and earth, the stolen mountain and the stolen sea. Instructions for dreaming when the earth, waters, animals, and human life are defined by imaginary borders, which remain closed in the time of dream. And instructions for dreaming when dreamlessness plagues, but the mountain and sea remain.
It's beautiful. And what about, tell us about your work, Ruth.
The work I'm going to be exhibiting is The Many Faces of Nyarod. It's an ongoing series that deconstructs the relationship that I have with my body, my emotion, and the space around me. Each photograph in the series was taken in a very particular time, I guess around like 2015, 14, and 16. And it was, I guess, a play on kind of becoming an observer. I think being a person of color, a woman of color, a black woman, you're constantly, I guess, looked at. So I just wanted to see myself and just step out of myself and become the observer and observe myself. So those are the images that they're a series of photographs that I've taken. And there's two photographs that I've taken from a friend of mine, Awak Kongwer. So it's called Transition, and it's a red, like the red photograph, but yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you, Ruth, like, how does working with self-portraits, like, inform your sense of self or how you feel yourself to be perceived by others?
I guess going back to what I said about becoming an observer, I think stepping out of yourself through portraiture and observing yourself is such a very interesting experience, in terms of you get to, like, it's like you get to step out of the other mirror. But also at the same time, I think photographing yourself is such a very interesting, intimate moment where you begin to have this relationship with yourself and you get to understand who you are or who you're becoming or who you were. So having a series called The Many Faces is just photographing the different versions of myself that have existed, the different me's that have become these, like, you know, non-linear, I guess, identities that have existed and will exist or have, you know, are existing. So it's just this weird way of capturing, like, this metamorphosis that you're constantly going through. So I guess when you become the observer, you just, yeah, you begin to watch yourself. And that's a very interesting experience, because I don't think that we really observe ourselves that well. So to do that in through photography and, you know, it's, yeah, like I said, looking back at the photos now that I haven't seen in like a few years, it's interesting to see who the person I was in those moments, in those photographs and the stories and whatever I was holding in those moments, whatever memories I had those moments, and the fact that I was very oblivious of what was going to happen. Like, you know, I never knew that there's going to be time where I'm going to reflect back on those images and look at myself and be like, wow, I was there at that time, but here I am now. So it's this play on time too, you know, like, is you existing in the past through the photography and you existing in the present moment by observing that photograph. So it's, I don't know how to answer that question, but I hope I did. But yeah.
No, that was so cool. Thank you. I think, like, I'm a dancer, and I kind of find that, being a dancer makes me very kind of aware of my body and what that body means. And, so I'm just kind of reflecting, like, as a visual artist who works in, like, self-portraits, like how has that kind of altered your relationship to your own image, do you think? Or
I'm more aware how I look like. I think I was really afraid of looking at myself in the mirror for too long. But I think because of COVID and being locked down and all that stuff, I started meditating and I started really just meditating in front of a mirror and just staring at myself. So to observe yourself in that way, where you begin to look at yourself and you look at these, like, insecurities or these imperfections, but you're like, wow, there's no other being like me that looks like me. You know, so it's like there's this sense of appreciation that begins to happen where you begin to accept yourself and how you look like, because I feel like I see a lot of people, but I don't see myself. So when I sit down and see myself, it's a very interesting experience where I was reflecting outwards, and now it's more so I'm reflecting inwards, because now I know how I look like. I know how Ruth is, you know, and, you know, so it's like it's this weird experience of just, like, you know, my consciousness looks like in a human form. It's very interesting, you know, to observe in those ways and just to look at, you know, but yeah, my perspective on myself has changed because I just, like I said, never paid attention to how I look like, and now that I look at myself, I'm like, wow.
That is so cool. Thank you for sharing that, Ruth. It's amazing. Manisha, I was, like, your work draws quite heavily from, like, your dream material, and I was wondering, like, how you know, you're sharing this quite, you know, intimate part of your psyche with the public through your work, and I was wondering, like, how does that act of sharing, like, influence your relationship with your subconscious or with your dreams? How do you think that sharing sort of affects you?
I think it allows me to have intimacy with the world, which is something I always sort of sought to happen by sharing any kind of art or writing with the world, is a need for that intimate connection. And consequently, I can have conversations with people who interact with the work, but all those kind of filters have dissipated, so you're no longer making small talk, but you actually delve like right into really deep, intimate conversations. And I think the sharing of the psyche allows me to do that. Having said that, I am very careful about what I share as well. Like, there are some dreams I keep to myself, and some or aspects of some dreams that I do share with others.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. Thank you. I'd like to ask you both how healing sort of figures in your creative practice. I know, Manisha, you've done work on the COVID-19 collective dream journal, which sounds really exciting. And Ruth, you've talked about radical healing as a practice of resistance. So, yeah, I'd just like to ask you both, like, how healing sort of figures into your work.
I think dreaming and dream sharing is often a confrontation with aspects of ourselves and aspects of our communities that need healing. So when we make a commitment to dream practice, or when we share a dream, we are actually sharing parts of ourselves that sort of need that closure, or need that love, and need that connection. And yeah, with the COVID-19 collective dream journal, that was so expansive in the sense that it, for me, allowed me to participate in a sense of community healing by being able to access the private realms of all these different people from all around the world and what we're all going through during this wayward moment in history. So, yeah, I think the healing is definitely, it's never something that's sort of complete, or there's no absolute answer, but it's more like an invitation into a kind of a process.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And what about yourself, Ruth?
I think when it comes to healing and my relationship with healing, especially being a, you know, immigrant, a settler on stolen land, a dreamer, you know, somebody that is always connecting to ancestral energy and always tap into those spaces. I think healing is a tool that, you know, we all, you know, are gifted within ourselves. It's a practice, and it's an ability, it's a space, it's, I guess, any whatever connection that you have with it. But for me, when it comes to creating art, that is a practice that I call as healing, because those are the moments that I am kind of letting down the gods and, you know, in that space of just being myself and tapping into my emotions and, you know, letting go of some emotions that no longer need to be there anymore and releasing them. So I think that, you know, for me, when it comes to healing as a tool or as a form of resistance, during COVID, I thought I had to be productive. I thought I had to keep working and moving, that, you know, at one point I was like, I need to just stop, you know, like, who told me to be in this like frequency of just constantly just being in this movement, and just like, I just needed to breathe. So I just sat down and I was just like, I'm not going to do much. And that is going to be my way of radically healing myself, of being like, I'm going to say no. I'm not going to overachieve. I'm not going to put myself out there. I'm going to, I guess, reclaim my energy and call back my energy, because I've been giving so much that I realize I don't have enough for myself. So, you know, healing is this process of kind of bringing breath back to yourself, you know, is this moment of, you know, connecting to self, you know, connecting to, you know, the divine, connecting to ancestral energies, and just connecting to your higher self and having those conversations as to, you know, who are you, where are you going, or where did you come from? Like, what are the next steps? And I think having those conversations with myself during COVID, you know, because it was just a very uneasy time of just like, you know, a massive disruption of just, you know, things just being, you know, awkwardly, I wouldn't even say still, but it's just like this weird still chaos that I was like, I can't, you know, allow this external noise to really affect the internal self, you know. So, you know, for me, I think radical healing is understanding the power of really affirming your boundaries, of being like, you know, sometimes I don't have to give, you know, sometimes I need to give to myself. And I think as artists, we just know how to just be so nurturing and just give because we have so much inside, but, you know, we can get empty sometimes. And sometimes we just need to, you know, feel ourselves back and just, yeah.
Oh my God, such wise words. I need to take on some of that as well. Yeah, like my next question sort of ties in to that. How has living in a global pandemic affected your creative practice? And what are your processes for creating work in this stressful time? Or I might amend that and also like, or not creating, creating work. Yeah, so how have you, and Ruth, you've already kind of addressed this in a couple of ways, but yeah, if you've got anything else to add.
I think for me, I also had this anxiety that because we are all at home and on lockdown, I had to create, that I was like, you know what, I don't have to create. Like, who's forcing me to create? So I think that, you know, how it's affected me is that it's made me really comfortable in the stillness that I've created in, you know, in my space. So I've just really been sitting back and refining the work that I've already created and asking myself, like, where that energy came from, and just really sitting with myself and actually creating a sustainable process. So I guess it's disrupted me in ways where it stopped work, you know, being an artist, sometimes you rely on that financial stability of working and experimenting in those art spaces. But then when you have COVID, where it's just kind of disrupted everything and you can't access those spaces. So it's really in a negative way, it stopped that space, but it's allowed me also to look at my work and ask myself, will my work only be displayed in exhibitions? Like, at those only spaces I'm relying on in terms of being an artist and showcasing my work. So in ways, it's just, I guess, allowed me to just, I guess, not assimilate, but adjust myself and mold myself in a way that it's like, it is very extremely stressful, but at the end of the day, I'm not engaging in that stress because I'm not manifesting that in my life. So I'm just here, just trying to create a flow where it's like, to create is a very, I guess, intimate space and an intimate process. So I have to take time to really understand that for me to create or for me to tap into those spaces, you know, I have to honor it. And now being like COVID and everything, it's just really opened up more space for me to explore and experiment those things. But, you know, there's negative things, but, you know, I don't like to focus on those things. I like to create solutions. But yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What about yourself, Manisha?
I found the pandemic has been extremely illuminating in terms of kind of shining a light on just my idea of humanity as a whole, as individual narratives have kind of diminished and these communal collective narratives have sort of come to the forefront. I feel like our psyche, our collective psyche as a species is restructuring itself, and that restructure is quite painful. Mm. And we experience that together. So yeah, that's impacted me hugely in personal and public kind of realms that I sort of move in and out of. It's also emphasized the importance of the imagination to me and sort of made clear the role that artists play in society and how important artists are right now to sort of be that gateway to imagination and to help others be in that imagined space as well, because all the rules have been thrown out the window and there is a new world order that is kind of coming into force. So we do have this funny little window where we can actually create and imagine something, and there is room for huge societal changes to be made, and we need imagination for that. So that's just been something that's been on my mind since the birth of the pandemic, I guess, and the pandemic being a portal to a collectively imagined new future, which will only kind of work if we're all imagining the same thing. Whether that can happen or not, I don't know. It definitely has changed the way that I work. I previously was doing a lot of in-person things like performance. That part of my practice has sort of diminished and been kind of out of my control in that sense, but I've just gone deeper into writing, actually, and using writing as a blueprint for perhaps other works or performances that may come into play one day. But yeah, I've just been working on deepening that practice and adapting to the times, I guess.
It's really exciting. I like your, yeah, like the kind of portaled imagination. Yeah, that's kind of really kind of hopeful, and yeah, it makes me feel a bit better about the whole situation. That kind of ties into my next question, which is, I think will be the final question. So how do the real and the unreal figure in your work? So you can interpret that however you like. The unreal could include things like dreams, alternate realities, imaginary realms, fantasy. And I kind of read, like Ruth had spoken elsewhere about deconstructing the existing imaginations around the African, around African identities. So I don't know if that could be a prompt, but yeah. So how do the real and unreal figure in your work? Ruth, would you like to address that?
I'm trying to like figure out another way to connect to those words, because I feel as though as a visibly Black person, at times you become something a bit foreign, not a bit, but a lot foreign. So you become this unreal thing that everybody just stares at and is curious and is always constantly deconstructing, because it's a figure that it's not seen or known. And that is because of the history of Australia and the fact that Indigenous bodies were an unreal figure that were, you know, hidden and pushed away. So anything Black, anything to that prognosity is also, you know, pushed in that direction. So you come to this society, you come to this space, and you come to this, like, you know, this white Australian world, and you're seen and you're watched and you're looked at, and you're like, what the hell is wrong with me? Like, you know, you don't see it because you're born in this skin, you're born this way. So for me, how that is played in my work is that all of my photographs are of Black people, because growing up, I didn't see that representation. So within myself, there's this longing and this desire to see Blackness represented. I felt as though it was a purpose and it was a calling for me to showcase, you know, how I see Blackness, you know, not how whiteness sees it, is how Blackness is portrayed, how it holds itself, you know, because I think that when we talk about Blackness, there's so many things that is added by people who are observers, but when you're in it, when you live the experience, you become the narrator, you become the person that, you know, now tells the story, you know, from your perspective, from your skin, not just from your skin, but also from your identity on who you are, because I am Black, but I also at the same time, you know, I'm Sudanese, you know, I have this connection to, you know, ancestral space and ancestral knowledge that I also want to share in a way of photographing South Sudanese people and showcasing them. And I find this liberation of, you know, having photographs of not just myself, but of people that I see, because, you know, the way that whiteness connects to blackness is just, it's so disconnected that I'm not trying to connect anything. I'm just trying to show. I'm just trying to represent, you know, people who look like me, people who exist like me, you know. So now it transfers in a place that it's realism, you know, it's in your face, is that, you know, blackness exists. It's not something that is, you know, can be pushed away and dehumanized and deconstructed and, you know, consumed or exploited or, you know, experience this intense pain. Is blackness is also something that is beautiful. Blackness is also something that is, you know, ethereal and incredible. It's just, it's never really, I wouldn't say it's never been, you know, showcased or portrayed, but it, you know, it's always been ignored here in Australia. So I feel as, you know, as a South Sudanese artist, you know, coming from that community that has been, you know, torn apart by the white media, I feel like it's not a responsibility, but I think it's a way for me to, I guess, resist back to how, you know, blackness is seen, and, you know, from those negative connotations of how South Sudanese people are portrayed, for me to showcase like the essence, like the beauty of it. I feel like it's, I'm not counteracting the negativity. I'm just ignoring it by just saying that this is the way that we can resist this, you know, and deconstruct this colonial structure that is trying to still oppress us and will oppress us. So it's this act of rebelling against something that's always hidden blackness.
Manisha, how does the real and the unreal figure in your work?
I guess it's almost like a kind of a reconciliation or a stitching together of something that I feel like has been severed from childhood. So I lived in Fiji for the first 8 years of my life, and I always think of that period of my life as a time where it was like dreams and reality and the living and the dead were entwined. And then I moved to Aotearoa, New Zealand with my family, and really it did feel like a violent kind of severance of that dream space or that mythic space or that unreal space. Or perhaps there were aspects of our culture and our stories that were now deemed unreal, that were actually just a seamless part of our lives before. So I work very actively with dream spaces and just spaces of ancient story and like religious story as well, and anything that is abstract, because I am trying to weave together things that I feel like have been kind of severed or take, not so much taken away, but it's that you have to put certain things away in order to assimilate into another way of being and a more kind of, well, to be part of the colony, I guess, is you put your dreams away or aspects of your culture that are now unreal. So yeah, it is definitely a me trying to reconciliate or retrieve or recover those parts of myself that I feel like have gone far away, I guess.
That's so cool. Oh my God, thank you so much, both of you, for this conversation. Like, I really enjoyed speaking to both of you and hearing about your work. And yeah, I would like to keep going with this and keep talking to you, because you all have such like amazing ideas and your work is so exciting. But yeah, thank you, Ruth and Manisha, for talking to me. And I hope all your listeners come and check out Rapid Eye Movement, and so you can see their work in the space. It looks really beautiful. So yeah, thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.